Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for July 26th, 2011. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm speaking with Sarah Courtnage about a screen to identify compounds that inhibit the formation of invadopodia, which are cellular projections that allow cancer cells to invade tissues. Courtnage is a researcher at the Sanford Burnham Medical Research Institute in La Jolla, California. Welcome, Dr. Courtnage.
Thank you.
Cancer cells can leave their original site in a primary tumor and travel to other sites in the body, but before they can establish a new tumor, they first have to infiltrate the new tissue. So after cells have disseminated to a new site, how do they invade new tissues?
So you're absolutely right. This process by which cancer cells leave their primary site and go somewhere else is what we know as metastasis. And this is a complicated process that involves several steps. Cancer cells need to be able to move, but what we call invasion requires not just the motility of the cells, but their ability to create the space in which to move. And this ability usually requires enzymes called proteases to break down some of the barriers, the protein barriers, that would normally prevent cells from moving out of their tissue or within the tissues when they're not supposed to. And so cancer cells have adopted a number of different mechanisms to do this. The one that we're interested in is how these proteases are regulated to facilitate this invasion process.
Invasion isn't just required for metastasis. Isn't invasive behavior also required for cancer cells in their primary site to grow into the nearby normal tissue?
Yes, this is what our lab and other labs are beginning to see in our research. So when people first started to study invadopodia, they thought about this process of metastasis, this initial escape from a tumor into another site. But as we study some of the components of invadopodia more, we're finding that they're also required for that primary tumor to grow as well. In other words, similar mechanisms seem to be required to create the space to grow in a primary tumor, in a metastatic site, as well as to get into the blood system and out of the blood system in that process of metastasis. What's interesting to us in particular is that since this process is used for tumors to grow, that one might have the opportunity to think about targeting this mechanism to slow the growth of tumors as well as to halt their metastasis.
Are these structures, the invadopodia, absolutely necessary for all types of cancer cells to invade normal tissues, or can certain types of cancer cells invade some tissues even without making the invadopodia?
So the full analysis of that question has not been done yet. I would be surprised if this was the only mechanism by which cancer cells can invade, because cancer cells are very good at adopting a range of different mechanisms to facilitate the growth of the cancer cell. But invadopodia have been found in many different cancer cell types. The cell types that many of us study are melanoma, breast cancer, prostate cancer, glioblastoma, head and neck cancer. These are all very invasive tumor types. I think what might be the case is that, say, for example, a certain percentage of breast cancers might use the invadopodia mechanism for invasion, and others may not. We'll have a clearer idea of that as we do more research in this topic. One of the things that we're interested in doing in my lab is developing these tool compounds so that we can address that question more broadly, particularly in animal models, rather than doing everything in tissue culture. And that was another reason why we started this research that we're talking about today.
In this current study, your group has screened a library of compounds for their effect on invadopodia, with the goal of identifying compounds that inhibit the invadopodia without having toxic effects. What was your assay, and what were the results of your screen?
So I should explain what invadopodia are. So invadopodia are finger-like projections from the cell surface, from the bottom of the cell when cells are growing in two dimensions. And these finger-like processes are rich in a structural protein called actin. And so our assay was to culture cells that make lots of invadopodia in a high-throughput format in plates that contain 384 wells in which we can seed the cells, and then stain these cells with a stain that will light up the actin and show us where the actin is. And then in a high-content assay, high-content screening means that we take fluorescent images of these cells after we've treated them with various compounds. We can then apply an algorithm that will enumerate the invadopodia in these cells under the different conditions and inhibitor conditions that we had. So the assay then is straightforward in terms of the biology, if you will, but required a great deal of effort in terms of algorithm development to be able to enumerate the results without having to go through every one of them by eye. So we used a small compound collection called the LOPAC collection and screened for their effects. And we were particularly interested to identify compounds that affected invadopodia formation without toxicity to the cells. And we identified several such compounds that inhibited invadopodia. But quite surprisingly to us at the time, we also identified compounds that promoted the formation of invadopodia in these cells.
In terms of the compounds you identified that inhibit invasion or inhibit the formation of invadopodia, are any of those compounds that are currently used as chemotherapeutic agents or candidate compounds?
None of the compounds that we identified are currently used as chemotherapeutic agents. So inhibitors to some of the targets are in clinical testing. So, for example, we identified MEK inhibitors as inhibitors of invadopodia. That for us was a proof of principle because it was already known that MEK controls invadopodia formation, and MEK inhibitors are in clinical trials right now. Likewise, the assay that we used was to use cells that were transformed with the oncogene SARC, and we identified SARC inhibitors in our collection. Again, that's a proof of principle for our screen. There is actually one approved SARC inhibitor in the clinic. So that demonstrates that perhaps one can think about the use of inhibitors to these targets in this way. The other compounds that we identified were inhibitors of a class of kinases called cyclin-dependent kinases. In our research, we validated one particular kinase called CDK5 as the molecular target for these inhibitors and important in invadopodia formation. While there are no CDK5 inhibitors being tested in the clinic right now, the compounds that we identified could form the starting points for developing potent inhibitors that would work in animals and in people for clinical testing, if that was of interest to the pharmaceutical industry.
You mentioned that in your screen you also were able to identify some compounds that promoted invasion. What sorts of compounds did you identify?
So we identified two types of compound in this screen. The first was a serine threonine phosphatase inhibitor called cantharidine. We didn't follow this inhibitor up in this study because it is well known that phosphorylation in general controls invadopodia formation. And so it's perhaps not surprising that inhibiting dephosphorylation would promote the formation of these structures. Furthermore, this inhibitor is rather non-selective. The other compound, though, that was extremely interesting to us was a compound called paclitaxel, which has the trade name of Taxol, which is a chemotherapeutic in wide use currently to kill cancer cells.
Paclitaxel, or Taxol, is used clinically to treat cancers, but your study shows that paclitaxel can actually promote the formation of invadopodia. So does that suggest that its use in chemotherapy might actually promote tumor invasion, even though paclitaxel kills some tumor cells?
Indeed, it does suggest that, and we're very concerned to follow up these results with further studies. Paclitaxel is used clinically, and in many cases, it causes the death of the cancer cell. The concern is that some cancer cells are intrinsically resistant to the cell-killing effects of paclitaxel, and other cancer cells become resistant to its effect during treatment. So the concern is that if cancer cells cannot be killed by paclitaxel, they might become more invasive. And in fact, in our study, we took an ovarian cancer cell line, which is resistant to the cell-killing effects of paclitaxel, and we showed that in that cell line, paclitaxel treatment did promote the invasive ability of those cells in tissue culture. So in the future, it will be very important for us to follow up these studies with animal experiments to determine if this happens in vivo as well.
Has anyone looked at clinical results from patients treated with paclitaxel to see if any of those patients showed subsequent metastases of tumor cells that weren't killed by the initial treatment?
That has not been done directly, but there are some hints in the literature that this mechanism may occur. So, for example, patients with ovarian cancer who become resistant to paclitaxel, often at that time of resistance, they have widespread metastatic tumor cells. There's also an observation that paclitaxel can increase the number of circulating tumor cells. Now, that may be because those cancer cells are dying and being shed into the bloodstream, but it may also be that they became more invasive. And so these are indeed important questions to follow up. One of the questions that we asked in our study, because of this paclitaxel result, is which is dominant? If we add an invadopodia inhibitor and paclitaxel together, what happens? Do the cells become less invasive or more invasive? The answer is that the cells become less invasive. So in the case where we tested it, for example, by mixing paclitaxel with a CDK5 inhibitor, we lost invadopodia and invasiveness. So that suggests then that combining paclitaxel with an invadopodia inhibitor in the future would be a likely clinical path, because one would get the best of the cell-killing effects of paclitaxel, but were the cancer cells to also become invasive, we could shut that down with an invadopodia inhibitor. Now, obviously, this is speculation at this point. We have a long way to go before we can test that, but these are the directions that we're thinking of going in terms of developing some of these inhibitors further in the future.
Well, thank you, Dr. Kortnich.
Thank you very much.
That was Sarah Kortnich, senior author of a paper published in the current issue of Science Signaling. That paper is by Quinta Valle and colleagues, and it's titled, A Cell-Based High-Content Screening Assay Reveals Activators and Inhibitors of Cancer Cell Invasion. And that wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.